This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 56 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. Today we visit with Master Kevin and Slave Fairy, Southeast Leather Fest title holders. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome back to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Today the studio is full, Beast.
Yes, it is, with some lovely flesh. I look to both of the lovely ladies here, and we have a wonderful gentleman with us, too. We have Chrissy with us today.
Hi, how are you? In our studio today, we have Master Kevin and his lovely slave fairy. They're visiting us, traveled all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina. Terrific. And they are the title holders, 2014 MS title holders. And they've come to Nashville to grace us here in our studio and also to do a presentation for our local BDSM club, The Mark, as well as present for our MASS chapter. I'm the senior co-director of the only MASS chapter in Tennessee, and we're very proud of that. And I'd like to welcome you to Kinky Cast, to Nashville, and to MASS. Thank you so much.
Well, hello there. It's really great to be here.
We're so pleased to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. I don't know anything about you other than your title holders and that I've heard nothing but wonderful things about you from our mutual friends around the country. How did you become involved in MS?
I became involved in MS when I'd gone to a couple of local play parties around in Charlotte, and one day I went to a workshop. It was Together in Leather, 2005. It was held back in Charlotte, and that was in November, actually. And the first morning there was a workshop about communication. The presenters there were just incredible, and that was my first introduction to the world of mastery and slavery. And I was hooked.
When I was a kid, if there was a game being played, there was going to be a slave and there was going to be a master somehow. You know, if it was cowboys and Indians or whatever. And I went to Disney World and I saw this. I went to the like Turkish place, I think, in Epcot. And there's this beautiful belly dancer and this guy that had this huge like Turkish tea thing with a big long spout strapped to his back. And he like did a backman and she knelt down with a teacup on her head and caught the tea. And I was like, oh wow, I want to be that. And then like a few years later, when I, you know, I was a teenager and I was looking for books on fairy tales, and I found a book about Sleeping Beauty that had been misshelved, and it was,
oh,
you know,
my. I know where this one's going.
And it was the like the erotic tales, you know, by Anne Rice. And it talked about, it was it's very fantasy oriented. It's not based in reality, but it, you know, had slaves, which I liked. And fast forward a few years, I got into the chat rooms, and I was playing when I was really young, teenager, doing SM since the early 90s. And I came into the actual community in 99 on my 21st birthday. And you know, fast forward, I had kissed a lot of frogs, but we finally met, and it took about 5 years for us to go from friends to DS to a full-time live-in MS relationship.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you've been in the scene in Charlotte for a number of years, is that correct? I know that you...
Well, I haven't been in Charlotte that long, but I've been in the Southeast, like Atlanta, Greenville, and Charlotte, and
okay.
Columbia as well.
So you moved up through the through yeah. the coastline. I can appreciate that. I'm a traveler myself. But you have been involved in the scene, and in leather particularly. I know, Master Kevin, that you are, because you were...
Mr. North Carolina Leather, right. 2008.
2008, that's right. And what drew you to leather? I know it has many different meanings for different people, and it's very powerful once you feel that need to vest in that lifestyle, because it's a part of you, really. What pulled you into leather?
We see things in our lives and we just become drawn to them, I think, because they resonate with a part of who we are. And whenever I found the leather community and I saw the brotherhood and I saw that there were other people involved in the same kinds of struggles that I was, in terms of being accepted and accepting myself, that I knew I belonged here. and that I was part of something.
It is a family, isn't it?
It is.
So I kind of fell backwards into it. When I went to my first munch in, what, 99, I guess, and there was this really hot guy, and I liked him, and we started playing and stuff, and he was in service to Master Doug Harris at the sanctuary at the time. So I got to start going to the sanctuary when I was 21 or 22.
What an amazing place that was.
It was pretty awesome. And I got to see, a lot of times I stayed in the kitchen because they would have male-only spaces. So I was very respectful of that always. But I got to see what the boys did, you know, and I got introduced to leather that way, and I just sort of came
hot.
Up at it. Yeah, and some friends and I this past year have started Appalachian Women of Leather, which is a women's leather club that we're starting up in North Carolina, and we've got our first pledge class right now, which is cool.
Back in 1999, women in leather in the Southeast were a young, uncommon thing. It was more masculine at that point, wasn't it?
Well, I think that there was women in leather. There was a lot of leather dykes. I know there was some stuff going on closer to Myrtle Beach and stuff, but I personally was not at that time that active in the women's community, and only later did I really come into the women's community.
Because I know leather in the Southeast is evolved a little behind leather nationally, like everything in the South did. It took us some catching up, but we have caught up, and Appalachian Women of Leather is a wonderful project. I've heard good things about it.
Yes, I've got several friends that have joined the group, and I'm just so far away, it's not worth my time, really. I can never attend.
You know? You can be an associate member.
Oh, that's an idea. We need to talk.
Yeah, but we always have had, as long as, you know, I've been around, and even before, there was Southeast Leather Fest, which has been a huge resource to all the leather communities in the Southeast. And so we're very pleased to represent Southeast Leather Fest this year. We have our 20th anniversary coming up.
I know.
June.
I know.
I would like to jump back to Kevin for just a moment. You jumped in this with both feet. From your first event in 2005, was it?
Mm-hmm.
To a title in 2008.
Yes.
That must have been a whirlwind roller coaster ride.
It was pretty involved, I have to say. The opportunity was there. I felt like it was the right time and place for me to do that. And had a great time spending that year around the state, meeting a lot of people and just learning more about leather and myself and the community in general.
How did you meet?
Once upon a time.
It's the Anne Rice books.
Ooh, I still want to see the hall lined with men that have erections. Please, I just can't get that out of my head. But go ahead.
That was distracting. Okay, now I'm back. Once upon a time, a friend of mine and I went to a barbecue. So there she was, out on the back deck. You know, like I was saying earlier, something resonated between us. It took a long time to play out to where it has so far, but it's been an interesting journey.
So he remembers meeting me at the barbecue. I don't remember meeting him at the time.
Oh,
okay.
But he kept pinging me on IM and stuff. And then I remember the first time I really took notice of him was we were helping our friends move, and he was smoking a cigarette, and he was leaning back against the wall, and he had on these state trooper sunglasses. and he just smiled at me, and I saw him, and I was like, oh my God, he has a pretty smile, but he looks like a serial killer.
Yeah, well.
But I have a fetish for that, you know?
The best talk.
Here we are.
Yeah. The best tops do have that air of danger about them.
Yeah, totally.
Yes. So you met back at a barbecue and progressed on through a couple of years. And are you married?
We are.
You're married?
We were married back in March.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great.
This is one of the love stories of our community because we are such a hookup, breakup. I like to say our family tree is a wreath.
Okay. All right. I'll buy that.
This is a affair that blossomed over a period of several years here, which is a lot different than the Velcro crawler of today that happens. So how did this evolve into this relationship that is so powerful and strong today?
It evolved, well, as you know, as we've been saying, it evolved slowly. I had some things I needed to learn about myself and become sure about myself and the direction I wanted my life to take. And I knew what I was being drawn to, and it was being drawn to a relationship with her. And there were some things going on in her life that she had to get around and become to a certain state of life, kind of, before we could really pursue a 24/7 relationship. So it was worth the wait. It's been a journey.
It was interesting because, like, when we first were starting out, we were just friends. And like I said, he kept pinging me on IM. And at the time, I was, I did not have a normal schedule. I would, like, go to bed at 4 a.m. and sleep until, like, 2. And I wasn't real productive in my life. But he would always be on at, like, 7 a.m. So I would start rescheduling myself so that I could talk to him because we'd have such interesting conversations. Then I didn't know how to go to bed early enough to deal with that. So he was like, take Tylenol PM. So I eventually got in a normal schedule with the rest of the world, and he would give me like suggestions for my life and stuff, and I would take them. And it really slowly evolved into DS. And we were secondary partners for a long time before we became primary partners. But eventually we did. And at one point we were talking on the phone like 6 hours a day sometimes. So, and finally he told me to move to Charlotte, and I did. We finally did get to the point. We define MS, and this is just for us. This isn't like the one true way, right?
There is one true way.
Right. Sure.
It's mine.
It is yours. Absolutely. I agree with you completely.
The one true way is mine.
Yes, indeed.
And the one true way is yours.
Everybody's got their own. So, but how we define it is that the master accepts 100% responsibility and the slave gives 100% obedience and surrender. And so we had to get to that point where we could really do that for real, or at least live in pursuit of that.
Live in pursuit of that. And that's the important thing, because, you know, there's that theoretical, hypothetical, glorious kind of philosophical world, and then there's real life. The real life aspects can be challenging sometimes, but
the fantasies, everything's in master's hands. But when the police stop you for a speeding ticket, you can't refer them to master. That doesn't work. So reality just keeps on intruding constantly. How do you get over those? Around them, over them?
We take them as they come. And if we have to, we pull back on our basic principles, kind of our foundation. Great example. I'm responsible for her, but I can't be driving her around everywhere. She's going to have to get out and be responsible for driving from to the grocery store or whatever. If she gets a ticket, well, she knows what she did wrong. She knows what she needs to do to correct it. And she knows what to do not to make it happen again.
I like to use the metaphor of like a concert violinist, right? Every time they pick up the violin, they're not going to have like a perfect concerto. Sometimes it's going to squawk. Sometimes you're going to hit a wrong note. Sometimes it's going to sound terrible. And that's how my obedience is sometimes. And that's how his responsibility is someday. Some days we're beautiful, melodic tunes. And then sometimes I'm like, you know.
I hear you.
So we practice. It's a practice.
It's a practice.
Like any practice.
Are you saying that you're a human being?
Actually, I'm a fairy.
It's true.
Yes, I'm a human. We're human.
But despite it all, we continue to make music.
Excellent analogy. I like that. What brought you to self? Whatever possessed you to run for a title?
Was it a bout of insanity, first off?
It was not a bout of insanity at all. It was a long, protracted episode of insanity over numerous years. No, not at all. Not at all. I tell you what, we've had so much fun, and we've met so many people over the years with MAST and other MS pairs around the country, with the places that where we've been able to attend. And we just felt like it was our time to get out there and just be examples, be ambassadors to the community, and be of service.
What is your platform?
We really felt called to serve. Like, we feel that we're in service to the community. We found that when we were talking to people and when we were writing things and having contact with people, you know, girls would come up to him and say, you know, what you said changed my life. Or they'd write me and say, thank you for what you said. You really helped me. And I know that for so many years, people did that for me. I felt like I was the baby of the scene for a long time, and so many people helped me, and I started going, hey, maybe time for me to be able to give back, and he was the same way. That's really our platform is, we're, like we said, we're human, and we think we have a very healthy and happy relationship. We want to share that, and we want to serve others and touch others' lives, inspire others, and so our platform is to serve the community and to share who we are, not just the fantasy, you know, but the reality, and talk about struggles we've had and how we have overcome it. And I think we do some good, or at least hope.
I think you probably do. I know that I've heard nothing but wonderful things about both of you from our friends and even acquaintances that I've crossed paths with. And
well, you need to talk to more people, obviously.
Oh, I talk to a lot of people, definitely, but thank you. What has been occurring to me, and this is a debate and a conversation that I hear and read about, and you know, people get very heated discussing the realities of living a 24/7 MS. Is this the type of life that you have?
It is.
And what are some of the challenges that you find there?
So, you know, I mentioned how he would, in his pinging and his IM, was sort of evolving me into structure, living structured. Well, he ended up training me how to, in my career. So I have a, he got me into a very high powered career. He taught me how to manage his household so it could run, like he can kick back and do what he needs to do and know that things are going to be taken care of. And he taught me how to run the finances, all this stuff. So he's helping me be the perfect slave for him. But at the same time, that's putting me in top space because I feel like I'm running the world. Mm-hmm. And so I stopped having submissive energy. Mm-hmm. And then that really messed with our dynamic.
And it messes with your head.
Yeah, it does. It does. Like, I don't want to run the world. Mm-hmm. I want someone to run, you know, else to run it and then kneel to them. And it's hot. But so for me, at least, one thing that helps me maintain our dynamic, or my side of our dynamic, is to be very mindful of maintaining a submissive headspace. I don't think that slavery and submission are always the same thing. And definitely slavery and submissiveness are not always the same thing. But for me and for our relationship, those two things go together to help our dynamic, because he loves that submissive energy and it really feeds him as well. And then when he's fed, then the dynamic is kind of self-sustaining.
Great answer.
I can understand being the role of the alpha slave, really throwing the bottom into a weird space, because you are having to make decisions and you've abdicated the decision-making process to somebody else, and now you're having to make them. Professionally, do you change hats in the morning, or how does that work?
That's something I've had to learn, because a lot of times I work from home, and so we're at home all day, you know, and I'll have a meeting and then I'll, you know, go up to nonsense in his room. So, or he'll come by and, you know, I'll be working on something and he'll need me. And so it really messed with my head at first, but, I've gotten pretty good at, on and off with the hats, being able to put boundaries around work. And when I take a break, I can leave it there, even if it's just getting out of my chair and going to serve him coffee or something and coming back. But
so
yeah, it's a big challenge.
A lot of compartmentalizing going on there.
Yeah, to some extent. But at the same time, I know that even when I am doing my job, I'm in service to him, in obedience to him, because it's really not anything I would have chosen on my own. But I enjoy the service to him. You know, if it was on my own, I would be like sculpting fairies and, you know, in a field somewhere. And I'm not doing that. But I sometimes I have to reel that in when the headspace goes too far, too high powered. I just, you know, repeat the mantra to myself, like, it's all in service. Or I sometimes will kneel, you know, or if he puts his hand on the back of my neck, that resets my headspace. So I just have certain things I know that if I do, it'll pull me back.
Certain go-tos.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Kevin.
Yep.
There is a huge burden on the tops. I know I struggle with the balance constantly.
You can't see me nodding here.
Yeah,
right?
I struggle with the balance between what's best for the relationship, what's best for my partner, what's best for our real world. How do you find the balance and keep on that edge and keep the DS energy going, the MS energy going, and still make sure that everything else, the reality and all that stays balanced? How does that work for you? We don't ask that question nearly as often as we do of the bottoms with their switching. Tops have to switch too.
That's absolutely true. All right. So, you know, I'm really trying to hold back from just giving my answer. How do you do that? And my answer would be not very well. You know, part of the answer is that I'm still learning. There are a lot of new things always coming up. What helps me, I mean, you just heard her talking about how we have our structures, we have our protocols, we have our things that we do just throughout the day that help maintain our headspace. But how do I deal with this burden of responsibility and juggling all of these things? Again, the answer is as best I can. I've accepted ownership of whatever it is, good, bad, or ugly. It's ultimately on me, but I'm okay with that. One of my pet peeves is when someone asks me, am I sure? Are you sure? Well, you know what? I've just spent a long time considering every possibility and what the outcomes could be and everything else. And whenever I tell you something, I assure you that I am indeed sure. And so I always trigger when someone asks me, am I sure? Because the answer is, I've assumed ownership for the outcome. Even if I'm wrong, I'm still owning that outcome. So I don't know if that's comforting or not, but it helps me to say, hey, can I deal with whatever worst case scenario or whatever? Does that make sense?
But you have to deal with the consequence that goes with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That can be a challenge.
So there's a great deal of personal responsibility on the part of the master in this, to take responsibility for the actions that occur.
Yes.
And the results, good and bad.
Yes, indeed. How did you put it again, that the master has to submit to something sometimes, or?
Submit to reality sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's
a great example of a master submitting. Some masters I know submit to a higher power. Some masters I know submit to the relationship itself, so to speak, you know.
Some masters I know submit to their children.
Okay.
you know, they get sick, they run your world.
Okay, there you go. Absolutely so. So those are some of the things that have helped me.
Self. Wonderful enterprise. We're at a, from my perspective, and this is my opinion, we're at a huge crossroads in our community. We're going mainstream. We are going mainstream, for better or for worse, and I can see positives and negatives here. So this is a big year. What do you see happening in leather from your perspective for this year? I mean, we got the movie.
Well, it's not just the movie. It's like you said, it's everywhere. We are becoming mainstream. I think it's a great thing. How long do we want to be in the closet?
I will argue, and playing devil's advocate, will we be losing some of our own magic?
Okay, here she goes. Here we go. I think I may know what's coming here.
Okay.
So I see an analogy to a lot of what has happened in the gay community, where, you know, you had, when it was more underground, and there were a lot of all-male spaces, and they had a certain feeling and a certain almost magic to them, and a lot of good and wonderful things have happened with, it's not in the, has to be a dirty secret, it doesn't have to be in the closet, but I've heard a lot of gay men say to me that they feel that they're losing these exclusive spaces and they're losing this magic. So I hear that. Ultimately, I do think our community as well, I think the positives outweigh the negatives, but I think that we can look at that and say, you know what? We need to guard our spaces. We need to be accepting of the fact that sometimes it's really good to include everyone and reach out to everyone and be a resource for everyone. But it's also important to protect spaces where you say, okay, this is an MS space, this is a master slave space, or this is a leather space. And sometimes we come together with our whole tribe and we have, you know, everyone can come and learn. And other times we go to places where people identify as we do. And that way we can restore that magic and then come back and bring that back to the bigger community.
And I see exactly where you're coming from, because when we broaden something, we tend to homogenize and fall to lower levels because we can't maintain that energy level across the broad. But when we go to the smaller groups, as you say, the spaces, we can do larger things in that small space than we could ever do in the large space.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've been reading this and that about this perspective of scarcity and a perspective of abundance. I see nothing but abundance in our community. It's a rich buffet of so many different things that we can try, and it's a wonderful thing. But that doesn't mean that we can't have the abundance of our own spaces suited to a particular interest and restricted to that.
I like the analogy of, there's, you know, the book Black Elk Speaks, very short. He was a little boy who was a Dakota Sioux. He received a vision when he was sick of this, like, epic vision, and he didn't come and take it back to his community because traditionally he would have come back and they would have had a dance and they would have incorporated his learning. You know, years later, he finally did. I had a mentor, we had read that book, and he said to me, don't be Black Elk and don't hold your vision back from the community. It's useless unless it comes to the community. And that's what I'm talking about with the spaces where they're smaller and they're more exclusive. The point of that isn't just to cut ourselves off from the world. The point of that is to be able to maintain the magic to then bring back to the community. And I think both parts are important, that we always then bring back that vision and that energy into the larger community.
Well, and I will tag there in that I think that some of what we do is at such a level that you need more experience before you try certain things.
And before you even see it.
Yeah, and before
sometime.
You even see
yes.
it.
Yeah.
And to go through the opposite way, I would be worried that, you know, some people are not going to interpret what we do.
Exactly.
And the correct reference.
For example, you know, if we're at home, like, I really get off on face slapping.
Oh.
If we're in public and someone that doesn't understand our dynamic sees him face slap me, they might think that that's okay to just go to somebody that they just met or to use face slapping as a way to control someone. Another thing is someone might see our dynamic and say, oh, the master is male and the slave is female. Therefore, they're making some kind of statement about females and males, and we are not. Like, to us, mastery and slavery is without gender. A master could be of any gender, and so could have a slave. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important to be aware of that. And when we're in the larger spaces, I guess the challenge is that we have to be more mindful of how others are perceiving us without restricting or killing who we are.
Yeah, on energy. Guess I'll agree with Kevin. I'm tired of the closet. I am tired. It's a boring in here.
Well, I'm proud of what I do. I want people to know what I do. I want people to help me with what I do, but I want people to understand exactly what I do. I don't want them to hear half of what I do and make up the rest on their own, and that's
yes.
my big concern.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that's a great statement. I'm concerned and excited both that, you know, we're at a turning point, a massive turning point in leather and kink and BDSM and all of the communities that we travel through with this new floodgate that's opening. And as you said, all this information, everything's out there, but now this big media push and mainstream. And I think mass as one unit of education, that's a very important block to help people understand, you know, the nonsense and the crap that's out there. And, you know, people are damaged greatly by wrong information and by not knowing what's happening. And as you said, Slave Fairy, when folks come to a dungeon or to a large play space or to an event and see some things that they don't understand, it can really blow their mind. I know I've done some scenes and people called me and wrote me later and said, are you okay? How did you let that happen? What, you know, what a beast, what a did that? And I said, calm down, it's okay. You know,
yeah,
we understood, this is fine. But, you know, it just blew their mind because they didn't understand. And as you said, face slapping, you know, I'm into face slapping and all kinds of other types of things. And it can shock people and they don't get it. And so you have to kind of spoon feed some of these new folks coming in. How do we do that? How do we reach out and do that?
I think that the answer is what was told to me a long time ago, and that I have found and I'm finding to be true, is that each generation comes along and has to make their own mistakes. We can't teach them how to behave, and we can't stop them from making their own mistakes. What we have to do is just to be available to them. Whenever those people do identify with, whenever that person identifies with mastering slavery, they'll be able to look around and go, ah, there's Kevin and Ferry. Maybe I can go talk to them.
Well, and that's part of why the title is so important to us, because I want to be that person. They can see my vest. That means you can come up and talk to me. You can write me. I will be the one who takes the time to talk to you. And, you know, if I have this official title on me, of course, anyone, I could talk to anyone, title or not. But when I have that title, that makes another person feel comfortable to come up to me. And I'm willing to go there. Whether or not I feel good that day or whether or not I'm tired, I'm going to smile and I'm going to bring it and I'm going to be available. And the same with Master Kevin. And I think being available, that's one thing. I think the second thing is telling our stories, sharing who we are, because you can have a stereotype in your head of who someone is, but when you meet them and they become your friend or your sister or your brother or your cousin, that's a very different thing. And that's what we want to be for the community. And I think that's all we can do to face this, you know, big cultural upheaval that's going to come.
Yeah, yeah, you've taken on a very important role. It's a heavy job.
We're excited about it.
We are
excited
about it.
Yeah, oh, I think it's wonderful, but I think it's great. And you two are wonderful ambassadors.
Oh, thank you.
Now, the ambassador part, how's it going?
Really, really well. We are, I can't tell you, I'm, let me stumble over myself for a second while I just have these flashbacks of everything that we've done in the past 6 months. It's been just so wild. We've met so many people in so many areas and had so many just wonderful, deep experiences and have learned so much about the different ways that people practice MS. The different cultures around our region, it's...
And we've learned so much and received so much from other people, and I feel like the more we give, the more people give to us, you know?
It does work that way, doesn't it? A big cycle. It's
absolutely
wonderful. It's love, you know?
Yeah.
Do we have numbers? How many cities? How many weekends so far? Let's give them the ideal of what title holder life can be like.
Normally, let's see, we've been going to... Just about every week we've gone somewhere, or even like I'm remembering a few weekends we were at home and we had other people coming to us, but we've, you know, several events a month. We should count though. I don't think we've actually sat there. He's a data head, you know, so he has actually made a chart and a map of like every place we've been.
I didn't think my chart would be very valuable on this particular show.
And I would love to see the end result, because I know that dynamic title holders like you can really reach a lot of people and provide a unifying force, because you're spreading a similar message and similar thoughts, and your thoughts may not be perfect, but you're spreading thoughts to everybody, and we're all getting to think on those thoughts.
Well, I assure you that our thoughts are not perfect by any stretch, but it's just that we are able to see people, and people are able to see us and say, hey, we share the same issues. We share the same challenges. How can we learn from each other about overcoming?
Even if they're not MS, like I feel like we have relevance beyond just the MS community, and it's amazing to see how the commonalities we have, like people I've met littles, I've met people that represent rubber, I've met, you know, a lot of puppies, I've met a lot of people that aren't necessarily MS, but who I feel very kindred spirit with and who we've learned from.
Well, we're sharing the human experience, and we're expressing it in a little bit different ways here and there, but we're all human. We're all here. We're connected together. We're all trying to improve ourselves and be the best we can and enjoy our life and learn new things about ourselves and relate to other people in a positive way. And that's what we're doing, right?
I think that we also share the experience of being an outsider to some extent.
Yes.
And having a big part of our sexuality be, quote unquote, abnormal. And so we may have experienced alienation from family mm-hmm. or friends or something in some place in life, like we didn't fit because of who we were. And being who we are is so important to us. And I think we have that common thread of pursuit of authenticity.
Yes, and to be proud of who you are.
A lot of us are outcasts in some way or other. We've been stigmatized by somebody along the way, most of us. Do you think that we are handling that well for our people? Sometimes I wonder if we're too accepting of people or not accepting enough of people's differences. We have served as a community that's been welcoming of people for mm-hmm. so long. Mm-hmm. And you all did the hard work on yourselves to get to the place that you are. Are we needing to do more for these people coming in to help them get to the right places? Or should we be accepting them where they are? Or
each person comes in and they have this just rich buffet of things to choose from, and they will end up finding their place, where they fit. I can point the way, you know, from, yeah. you know, you might go talk to that guy because you seem like, you know what I mean, whatever, but.
You seem like a sushi person, and there's a sushi line over
there. Yeah, basically, kind of like yeah. that. And if that's not your thing, then that's fine. But I think more importantly, in what I see, is the acceptance needs to begin with the individual. The individual needs to become more comfortable with themselves and with their sexuality and with who they are as people. And that's, to me, where the acceptance really needs okay. to start.
Did you answer my question. You answer my question.
Let's talk about being out and open. Are you out to your families and friends?
My brother lives with us, so we're out to him. And it's funny. I'm not out to my mother, per se. She understands our dynamic, but we don't use the words master and slave to her because they have such baggage to them. It's interesting, like, how much I actually do tell her without using those labels. A lot of times we are very much who we are, especially we work for a very supportive company. We can't share the name of it because of non-disclosure, but they're very supportive of alternative lifestyles. And so we don't go around discussing our sex life with everybody. But, you know, I wear my collar to work. Nobody ever asked me about it, you know. I wear my collar through TSA at the airport. We don't hide who we are. But at the same time, we acknowledge that the 5-year-old child in the grocery store did not consent to see me being led around on a leash. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we don't hide who we are, but we are aware of being respectful of others.
I'm out with my dad, but that's about it. The rest of the family knows that I'm involved in something very interesting that involves workshops and lectures and relationships and personal development and non-denominational spirituality and et cetera, but they're not really exactly sure what it is yet.
I find it very, very interesting, that list that you just rattled off, because so much of our community is just that. And that is something that the larger world may not really realize about us, how much work we put in to what we do, to be the best at what we do. It's not about the play as much as it's about honing the individual and the individual relationships.
I agree with you. I think that whenever I've talked to vanilla people out in public or whatever, I think that's the thing that impresses them most. Their first reaction is, ooh, wow, that sounds crazy and wild and stuff. And it's like, well, what are you going to do next? What's coming up next? And it's like, well, this is presentation, a workshop on communication and relationship skills. They're like, oh, well, ooh.
Oh, but I want some play, too.
Yeah, I think sometimes it is about the play for some people. Our relationship is not like play-based. We play sometimes, but that's a tool to help with headspace.
Yes.
But I think that we also need to acknowledge that for some people it is about the play. It is about the sex. It is about those things, and that's okay.
And listeners, you should see this visual of the sparkling eyes and the cheerleader mentality as she delivered that message. Go ahead, Barry.
And my shirt that says, tell me a story about giant pigs. You know, because I'm all about being a dirty piggy sometimes.
Ooh.
you do walk that edge, even for some in our own community. Many of those people that are going to be flooding our community in the coming months and years. It is about the play form. It's the bedroom.
Yes.
It is the orgasm that they get from these experiences.
Yes.
But we offer them so much more, don't we?
Oh, but the play, not only that, it's not just sex. It is sex.
Thank you. I like sex.
Yes, I do too. But it's also, it's bonding, and it, as you said, reinforces the headspace. It puts you in your place. If you're the bottom or the top, you go into top space. So it's, you know, how can you deny it?
You know, there's all this, like, what is leather to you, right? Well, leather started out like, you know, beer and fucking, like dirty, rough sex.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Been there.
Okay. And that's where we start. I used to tame water buffalo when I was younger, and they're totally wild until you get a ring in their nose, right?
Oh.
And then if you can grab the ring, if you can get near them without getting tossed over the fence by their big horns and grab the ring, they will follow you anywhere, and I would give kids rides on their back. I feel that leather is like this, because sex and dirty, perverted sex is the ring in our nose that hooked us here. Like, that's what brought us in. These fantasies, right? And this perverted sexuality that we have to have. But then, once we get there, it's like the universe takes that ring of sex and dirty pig pens and takes us into this world of brotherhood. And, you know, then come the, you know, the three muses, honor, integrity, and, you know, whatever else people say about it. And those things come. That's not what it started with. But those things evolved because we're being dragged by the nose of perverted, kinky, fun sex. So they might come for the sex, and then if they want to eat other dishes on the buffet.
If you stay long enough, you want to explore more in your head.
Yeah.
And you want to.
Mind is the greatest sex toy.
Yes. And you start peeling it back, and then you start giving presentations, and you start attending presentations. It just progresses.
Fairy, that was a really interesting analogy.
I thought that was a great analogy. You're wonderful, Fairy. I like you.
Buffalo.
My analogies are funny, I know.
I am waiting for your memoir. I want to know more about the water buffalo.
I'll have to post a picture of the water buffalo.
What's in the future?
Hope you can come and join us down at South Plains in March.
We're competing for International Master Slave in March at South Plains Leather Fest in Dallas, and we can't wait to do it.
Fantastic.
Well, I think we have strong contenders this year.
We have a lot of awesome contenders.
No, we have strong contenders from the Southeast. I don't care about the rest of them.
Oh, well,
we've
had so much fun with them. We've met almost all. We haven't met one couple yet, but we've had so much fun with those. With everything went so far.
It's
going to
be really cool.
I'm rooting for so.
Aww.
Well, thanks very much.
I'd like to bring the title home. Let's give Self a promo. Self is coming up.
The second week in June, starting June 11th through 14th.
It's going to be our 20th anniversary.
Yep.
We're back and better than ever. There's so much new, awesome energy. One really unique thing is that the people at Southeast Leather Fest get to help choose your title holders. They actually vote on a lot of the categories, and that's a new thing, and we participated in the first round of that, and we were a little scared about
really
it, but it
that.
Worked well, I think.
Isn't that an app? People can load
into
their phones.
There's a Yap.
It was really cool the way that worked out.
And they've got stuff for littles and ponies and puppies and really celebrate yourself.
Yes.
And explore yourself.
Explore yourself.
I see this. They've fine-tuned the message a little bit. That's a good one. It's a wonderful event. It's in Atlanta.
And Self is Southeast Leather Fest.
For those who will be Googling, and we'll have a link
on our Hot Links page.
Lady Catherine's done fabulous work there.
Yeah, Catherine Gross is amazing, a really good producer.
And the presenters are top-notch.
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed.
And the shows are very, very entertaining. So it's a well worth weekend for anybody that wants. This is going to be your first event. Self is a wonderful first.
Yeah, I agree. You know what? I agree with that very strongly. Self is a great first event.
No matter if it's your first event or your 100th event, there's something there for everyone. I can truly say that. There's not many places, you know, you hear that, but there's not many places that I can really, like, say that I guarantee that everybody, there is something there for everybody.
I think that I can't think of anything that I missed last year that wasn't there. 7-foot ponies was one of the more surprising things going through the halls, and the puppy pals and the puppy play. And it was a fantastic event.
The boot blacking.
The boot blacking.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it feeds you on spiritual, emotional, sexual. It feeds you on every level. You can find something there.
I'm hungry. I should go.
You should. You should have went last year.
Come see us this year.
Yeah, come this year. Come see us.
I want to come and see my family.
Well, the Kinky Cast will be there in force this year.
Good.
Well, thank you so much for coming to Nashville. I know that it was a journey. It was a trek
thank
over
you.
The mountains.
Oh, my gosh. In the rain.
With
the
bears and the chipmunks. Right. And I'm glad you're here. And I know as a spokesman for Mastem, I want to welcome you and really thankful that you're here. I'm looking forward to your presentation today.
Oh, we are too. It's going
to
be great.
We're so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having us.
What are you speaking on today? The three pillars of a relationship?
See, we're doing the three pillars, and we're doing the T.
Yes.
And we're doing at the mark, we're doing positions for everybody, like service positions and hand signals. And it's tweaked, so no matter what your body size, shape, or level of physical ability, there is a serve that you can do. And then Master Kevin's going to show the tops how to control your bottom from across the room.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
We've got a good lineup tonight.
Yes, absolutely. And play, of course.
Yes, oh, yes. And play.
And when you win your new title, we want to see you back here.
Oh, thank you.
We hope to.
Not if, but when.
Y'all are sweet.
Thank y'all for coming
thank
out.
Thank you.
You have been listening to episode 56 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. Next week we bring you Master Trish from Arizona. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week.